Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight Podcast number 213. We're recording this on Wednesday, the 16th of May, 2012. Not quite keeping to a weekly schedule, but still plenty to chat about. With me, down in Sussex, I have...
Rafe Blanford. Hello, everybody. Great to be here.
And up in Hull, we have...
David Gilson. It's good to be here, too.
Now, a few items of news. Nokia Map Suite has been really annoying me, and probably a lot of other people out there, judging from the conversations on Nokia discussions. Basically, every time we've gone into the Nokia store, it's popped up a little update available, Nokia Map Suite 3.9.95. So you install it, you update it, and you sit back, all seems to go away. The next day, back in the store, an update is available, and so on and so forth. It's obviously something broken in that update mechanism, and they've now fixed it. So if you've been plagued by this error, go in and do one last update, and it should never bother you again until it actually is a real update from 3.9.95. So great to see you. Well done, Nokia. Whatever you fixed, it shouldn't have happened. But now that it's fixed, it shouldn't be a problem any longer. Rafe, did you ever see this error on any of your devices?
I didn't see this error, but then I sort of installed the Map Suite fairly early on. And I suspect that I may have skipped this most recent update. But it's good to hear that it's been fixed, because I have had a couple of people email me about it. And ask. And it does seem that every now and then when you're using Nokia Store, some of the updates available seem to get stuck or don't quite become available for whatever reason. It's a little bit frustrating, especially when there's something in an update you actually want to get your hands on.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, this is Nokia Public Transport, a brand new beta. And it's worthy of note here, Rafe, because in addition to having new visual improvements, coverage information, and extra language localizations, in addition, which is blah, 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 in addition to all of that for the Symbian 3 and Anna and Bell phones, we've also got now full implementation for S65th editions. We've got Nokia Public Transport going right back to things like the Nokia 5800 and an X6 and even the N97, dare I say it. So this is a pretty far-reaching move by Nokia backwards in time, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's great news for owners of these devices. I mean, it's sometimes easy to sort of forget that there are plenty of people who are still using those devices out there. And I think of the sort of companion tools to Nokia Maps. You know, there's a couple of them out there, and there's City Lens and Beta, for example. I feel that Nokia Transport is probably the most useful to the biggest number of people. And this most recent update, you know, dramatically extends the number of people that can get their hands on this. I mean, I would imagine this is getting on for potentially an extra 50 million users. Of course, you won't get anything like that number of people downloading it, but it's really encouraging to see Nokia continuing to support these older devices. You know, I think it was a lot to do with sorting out some of the problems with Qt on the older devices. That seems to have been, you know, a bit more fluid now. And also just talking about the other bits in the update, it's great to see more coverage. I mean, I haven't been directly impacted by this simply because there was already coverage for London when I was using it. But obviously the usefulness of a tool like this expands the more places it covers. And I've said it before, but one of the things I like most about Nokia Transport is that I don't have to go install another app when I'm going to a different city. You know, I can get all of it in one go, if you like, because obviously there are, you know, individual maps for various transport systems around the world available as apps. And of course, Nokia Transport also does pretty good route planning. So if you're not familiar with the system, I would say it's an easier tool to use, quite apart from the time with the sort of pedestrian navigation at each end. So yeah, it's really good to see this one getting a wider release, because one of the probably most underrated of the sort of companion applications that Nokia provides.
Yeah, as Rafe mentioned there, this does use Qt to a degree, which I guess maybe that will stop the N97 owners installing it, because, of course, the Qt runtimes do need a fair amount of space on the system C disk. In terms of, David, you tried this. You did, I think you did the original write-up on the screenshots and testing Nokia Public Transport. For example, say you were to come down to London for a little business trip, you'd be fairly confident about using Nokia Public Transport to find your way around the underground and the bus system. How confident do you feel?
I'd be very confident to do it, because the public transport system in London is so thoroughly indexed on various computer systems already. I mean, the data's out there for everyone to use. So I would trust it very much. So, and I would actually, I want an excuse to go down to London to actually try this out. I really want to use this in anger.
Well, I'm sure we can arrange something. Yeah, on the Nokia X6, of course, their 65th edition, with these cute modules, it really ran rather smoothly. I was rather impressed. I forgot for a moment I was using such an old device. So really, credit to Nokia. They've got Qt and the apps built on Qt running very, very smoothly on these older devices now with much more limited resources. Rafe, you quite enjoyed Nokia Public Transport too?
I did. I mean, as I said earlier, I got this one installed, and obviously I'm on a more recent device. I've been using this on Windows Phone as well, but actually the Symbian version has some nice extras, and I'll particularly highlight things like actually being able to see the stations along your route and having colours that match, you know, with the actual public transport system that you're on, and kind of the branding and the naming, because that means if you're, especially when you're new to a city, you can actually kind of follow the familiar signs. And obviously color branding is one of the things that's used to, you know, make sure you're on the right line, but also you can see, I've just come to that station, I've got to get off at the next one, and sort of prepare yourself. So for those of us who are like me, a bit paranoid when traveling by public transport and want to know exactly what's happening and when it's happening, this app is a really nice companion as well.
Okay, let's move on. I'm a big fan of YouTube. Now, as an archive of the entire world around us in video form, whether it's actually streaming it online or even archiving, we had debates in the past, haven't we, guys, with me, David and I both being fans of archiving and ripping YouTube videos for offline use, and Rafe being rather sceptical. But moving on from that, and it's just worth noting, I did a flow item up on the site. m.youtube.com has had quite a few updates recently, and it's now producing 3GP, that's a video file format standard, 3GP streams that are full 360p and as high quality as you normally get when you're doing these in default settings in clients such as YouTube. So basically, you almost don't need a YouTube client now on your Symbian smartphone. You can literally go just to m.youtube.com, tap on a video, there's no messing around with Flash at all. You simply... You tap on the video, start it playing, it starts the 3GP file downloading, and the standard Symbian videos player leaps into action, handles the 360p stream, which of course is the same resolution as NHD on the Symbian devices. So you get full screen, native resolution videos, and it looks rather splendid. I'm just very impressed. And if you log in, of course, you can get access to favorites, and you can do all sorts of other things you can do normally on the desktop version of YouTube. Rafe, did you try this at all? Does this impress you?
Yeah, I've tried this out, and obviously it plays into the debate about, you know, do you do a mobile website versus an app client? And YouTube, I think, is one of those services in particular that works well as a mobile site. And to be honest, I've always thought that. And even, you know, before this update, it was, you know, a pretty good way to use the service, especially if you were just coming across a video. You know, there, for me at least, I tended not to, you know, start up YouTube and go looking for a particular video. It would be when I was coming across it embedded into a web page or in a set of search results. And so the idea of using a client never appealed quite so much for me. But of course, you know, when you use a client, you do tend to get the extra features and the easier user experience. You know, you can get to things quicker, particularly if the app is well designed. You know, that's partly because of the limitations of doing things on the web, although those are increasingly disappearing, but also because they tend to be designed for that specific platform or that specific device. And so, you know, you get familiar cues in the UX, which make it easier to use. You know, mobile websites are often more generic. You know, you will get them optimized for specific devices, but you'll never get them for every device. But for my mind, what's happened here is, you know, Google and YouTube have gone to more effort to make sure they're presenting a good version of the mobile site to their Symbian users. And they've actually done something, you know, a long time before this for Android and also for iOS. So it's kind of catching up, and you're kind of getting the richer experience. And part of that's because the Symbian browser has been improved recently. And so it's able to support some of the things, at least, that YouTube is doing here. But yes, you know, I agree with you. There is far less need for a client application. Now, I wouldn't necessarily extend that out to say that's going to be true of everything, because it depends what you're looking at, what you're trying to achieve, which approach is going to be better. But I think this is a great advert for how the mobile web can create a really good user experience, which, as far as most people are concerned, is, you know, the same as an application. And don't forget, of course, with an application, you do have to overcome the hurdle of, you know, getting it installed. This is something that's immediately available and accessible to everybody. You know, if they're using that device, they will get this version of the mobile website.
Yeah. David, you're a big fan of QTube, like I am. I know it's £4 now, but I think it's worth every penny. It's a fabulous program. For me, the offline use, the downloading videos, is actually crucial to me because I spend so much time out in the country where the coverage is absolutely appalling. So if I want to watch videos, they have to be offline. Were you impressed by this little mobile YouTube version?
Yeah, I really like this, and it does make me think about whether the world went the right way with apps. In one sense, yes. We didn't need app stores or anything Apple, because the web was our app store. And I think this is, I mean, for anyone who doesn't have specific needs and just wants to look at the odd thing on YouTube, this is ideal. And I think the only thing that apps really, apart from when you have certain hardware requirements, the user experience thing that I would criticize on mobile websites is that you have to start the browser and then go through the list of bookmarks. It would be nice to have an app, have a bookmark looking like an app, which you can pretty much do with certain bookmark widgets now. So I think a lot of people would be able to use this. However, I might still go for an app because I think when something's written in native code, there's a lot less latency in the user interface. Plus, being able to download things, you have much more control over it, because if there's a video you want to watch a couple of times, you don't know when someone's going to go and delete that off the website. But at least if you download it, you've got it. It's yours.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's definitely a place for both this excellent mobile web version and also the native Symbian clients. So m.youtube.com and also QTube, which you'll find our review on the site. Now, also on the subject of the mobile web, there's a big update to Twitter. mobile.twitter.com. If you go there in your Symbian web browser, certainly if it's one of these Symbian 3, well, I guess even the 65th edition devices, Rafe, with the new web update for that, you'll see what effectively looks like a Twitter client with nice columns for timeline, replies, DMs, and so forth. A very, very slick experience for a mobile website. It really is almost as good as a client. It's not quite as fast, but it's available for everyone, and it's totally free. My only complaint, Rafe, and I know you probably tried this, is the fact that it's all black text on white background, which is appallingly inefficient. My usual rant, just blah, blah, blah. And I would say go and look at Dabr instead, dabr.co.uk, which is effectively exactly the same thing, but with the option of white text on a black or dark purple background, which is far more power efficient.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was just waiting for Steve to sit there and start ranting about AMOLED screens.
Yeah.
But especially on something like Twitter, which you could conceivably spend significant amounts of time on. I think it's a fair comment. On some web pages, I'd maybe emphasize readability, and some people find, you know, black on white easier. But for, you know, short messages like this, yes, I'm inclined to agree, and I'm a big fan of Dabr. I've used it many times in the past on devices. Sometimes it can be quicker, although I do also use, obviously, Gravity as my Twitter client, and so much of the time using Twitter is spent on that. But, of course, there are going to be occasions where maybe the mobile web approach is going to be better. Particularly, I would say, sometimes when I'm just going into links, and rather than having to jump in and out the browser all the time, it can be a viable option. Or indeed, people, you know, who aren't so into Twitter may not have a client application installed. And so, again, this goes back to what we were saying about web versions of services and sites versus having a client. Twitter, I think it's, you know, a good example where a power user is probably going to want a client, but a casual user will probably be quite happy using the mobile web version. There are some issues around, obviously, you have to load in a bit more data if you're using the mobile web version, because you're downloading some things every time versus just getting access to the sort of tweets through the data API. The one thing I would say about this is it's taken Twitter a long time to get here, and Google are the same. Actually, the browser has been capable of supporting this kind of functionality for quite some time now. So it sort of frustrates me in the sense that Google have taken so long to update something like YouTube. And again, the same is true of Twitter. If you look at the capabilities of the browser on Symbian 3, perhaps with some minor tweaks, they were quite capable of supporting the kind of stuff they're doing. You know, this isn't the really advanced HTML5 stuff. It tends to be the basics. And, you know, you can actually see this if you changed your user agent of your Symbian device using, there's a couple of hacks out there, even some applications that will let you do that, you could actually run it as something like an Android device or an iOS device, and you'll be served up a version of the page for those devices, and it would work faultlessly. And so it's only because these companies have now got around to maybe doing the testing and then obviously tweaking their recognition code so it recognizes what device you're using, that you're now getting served up the better version of these pages. And I just think, given that this is relatively simple to do from a technical point of view, I'm surprised it sometimes takes as long as it does to implement. Nonetheless, you know, good, it's arrived. It's a great way to use Twitter if you just want to use the web version.
Yes, well, I think this is, again, going back to what I was saying about websites actually being as good as or replacing apps. But I think in this particular case, yes, it's good that Twitter have finally got here, as Rafe said. And I think that having that website there is a good baseline for any applications that need to link out into the Twitter website for whatever reason. But however, in this particular implementation of it, I do have some concerns, because I'm looking down the timeline. I'm seeing the icons for like reply, favorite, and retweet, and they are incredibly small. And I don't care whether you're a power user or a normal user, they are very small. And because it's a mobile website, you can't pinch to zoom. So I think, yeah, if you want to use Twitter on the web, do stick with Dabber.
Of course, if you've got an E7 or an X7 with the 4-inch screen, or maybe an 808 coming up, then it won't be quite so small. But I do take your point, David. And certainly on the E6, and I guess on things like the C601, yes, it'd be very, very fiddly indeed. It's also worth noting, of course, that the expense point of view. I mean, Qt Tube, we mentioned, was £4. Gravity is £8. There are other freeware Twitter clients. I think Twimgo is one I've used on and off. So there are other options, but it's great just to know that this is free and this is available, as Rafe said. Now, Nokia DC16 is not a device, it's a charger, it's an accessory, and David's been reviewing it. Now, I'm a big fan of the ProPorter chargers, and this is very much along the same lines, but it's rather more slimline, though with a slightly reduced capacity and current output, David.
That's right, it's a 2200 milliamp hour battery, so you'll get probably less than two full charges, say, for an N8. But it has a 950 milliamp output current, so it will charge your devices up fairly quickly, actually. What I liked about this, though, was its double-ended design. The whole thing is, profile is a squircle, and it's just a long white squircle tube. And on one end, it's got a normal female USB port, and on the other end, it's got a micro USB port. And it's a rather ingenious design. You get one USB Type-A to micro USB cable with it. And if you want to actually charge the battery up, you connect the micro USB connected to the micro USB port on the battery and plug it into a USB port either on your computer or on a mains adapter. But if you want to charge a device with it, all you do is disconnect the cable and switch everything around. Put the full-size USB port into the battery and then connect the micro USB end to a device.
I hope you're following all this at home, by the way. Presumably you can picture it. David, what happens if you actually want to daisy-chain it and you want to have it the charger charging and your device charging through the charger, i.e. it's all in line? You'll need to find another cable, I presume.
Yes, you do need another cable, but daisy-chaining does work, which I quite liked, although there are some caveats with that. First of all, it has to be that the battery has to charge first. They don't charge in parallel, that they don't charge at the same time. And that has an unintended consequence of quite often the charge level of the DC16 will just drop up and down a little bit, and it'll be just enough to keep turning the charging to the phone on and off. And if you happen to have like audio alerts for initialization, your phone will be going beep, beep, beep all the time. So if you're going to do that overnight in your bedroom, set the phone to silent. And the other thing that it won't do in series, which I was kind of disappointed about, me being as geeky as I am, is that I was hoping that there would be some sort of data pass through so that you could daisy chain them both to your computer and sync the phone through the battery. That doesn't work either. However, if you're in that situation, you've got two cables, just plug them into separate ports. Now, it's hard to talk about external batteries and not mention the proporter chargers. And I have to say that really the proporter chargers, even the smallest, the 3400 milliamp hour model, they do offer better value for money than the DC16. Well, at least in terms of capacity per pound. But the thing that I really like about it is I like its clever design, and it is much more compact than the proporter chargers. So it is actually something that I could, and it actually is something I have done. I've connected the DC16 to a phone and just put them both in a pocket, a trouser pocket together, so I can actually charge my phone in my pocket. And that's got to be worth having. And it's good to, if you're like me and you can't even sleep with having the phone out of arm's reach from you, but you don't sleep near a main socket, you wake up with your phone battery somewhat depleted. So this can also keep the phone going overnight too.
So you have a DC16 under your pillow. Very good. Very good. It's worth noting, is it 2200 milliamp hours?
That's right. Yes, 2200 milliamp hours.
It's worth noting that that's not the actual capacity you get transferred to a phone battery, because there are always inefficiencies in the transfer process. So if you're doing the maths at home, then you're actually looking at about 1800, 1900 milliamp hours actually supplied to your phone battery. So it'll amply charge all of the current Symbian devices, even the upcoming 808. But you won't get, for example, two, as David said, two full charges of an N8. You'll get one charge and probably half a charge. But
yeah. I think if you're going to go on holiday, it's probably best to get one of the bigger proportal ones. I would class this as a good, like, roundabout town's extra battery.
Absolutely, and it's an improvement on the old DC11, which I've got sitting here as well. Now, up on the site during the week, I put up my own rather subjective list of the top 10 most beautiful Symbian smartphones ever, going right back in history, including things like the Sony Ericsson P800, which I'm very partial to. And the much ill-fated Nokia N76. I bet neither of you remember that one. What do you think, guys? Anyone agree with my number one, Rafe?
Well, I think you did all right on the number one spot, although I might have put the 701 in. But yeah, I think the C7 is probably that classic design. But everything else was pretty rubbish. I mean, you said it was subjective. And how? I mean, how on earth you managed to leave off the things like the N78 or even the 3650? Then there's the
3650
Sony.
Was an appalling abomination.
It was beautiful in its own way. It was unique and very special. For those that don't remember, it's the one with the kind of the round dial on it that sort of looked like someone had sat on it and squashed the bottom end. But
point. Someone sat on it and squashed it, and you're calling it beautiful.
Yeah,
it's a Teletubby design.
Well, I was always very fond of the 3650, partly because it was my first ever Series 60 phone, as it was back then. But also you could get it in a range of funky colours. I don't know, there's something unique about it. I'm looking at through rose-tinted glasses. But thinking about some other devices, you also didn't mention the N78. Now, I'll be the first to say that it did have some usability issues. This was kind of a black object then with lines on it for the keys, which perhaps weren't the best way to do it, but it sort of lit up beautifully, and I think it was a really great object of design. I mean, the trouble was, I think maybe the design overrode the function a little bit, but I was surprised that didn't get a mention. There's also things like the Sony Ericsson M600, and I'd also sort of bring into that things like the Sony Ericsson P1 and the W950. Those were kind of Sony Ericsson's UIQ range. They're kind of second and third generation. But for
I almost put in the W950. I had a look at it, pictures on the web, and I thought, yes, I remember that. I really liked that. But in the end, I had to just spread my bets around the different eras and the different interfaces. And the UIQ one that got the nod was the P800, because that was, you know, with the flip removed, that was, for me, the classic. Not as beautiful as things like the later devices, but for its time, it was 3 or 4 years earlier, and yet it was so much predated much of the current smartphones. And it was still, with that flip removed, it was still quite beautiful, I think.
Yeah, no, I think you can defend the P800. I might have just included, you know, one of the subsequent devices, maybe in place of the N76, which I don't know how you can describe as beautiful. It was a Motorola Razr knockoff of the very worst kind, not to mention the build quality really wasn't that great, and it had shiny bits and fingerprint magnets all over it. So
I just felt sorry for it. It had hardly ever been mentioned ever in the history of All About Symbian. I thought, at last we'll give it a moment in the sun, and before it flies off into the sunset into disgrace.
Yeah, well, it's so bad that I haven't actually got one in my personal collection of phones, which is not something I willingly admit to very often on this show, but I do have quite a few of these devices. I was also curious that you included the 9500 over the 9300, because I actually thought that was a more beautiful design, the miniaturization of it, and the 9500 always felt a little bit on the clunky side to me.
The 9300's problem was the way the hinges were implemented, with those two little bulky stubs for the hinges which just stuck out and they ruined it. If the hinge had been done in a more streamlined fashion, yes, I think I'd have gone for the 93.
And you also included the Nokia E6, I noticed. I wonder how you came to that decision with all the other of that line, because I think in some ways the E61, the original version, has a kind of retro appeal with its own kind of beauty. But actually it was the E61i, the follow-up to that, which introduce the sleek lines, but if I'm honest, I probably would have opted for the E6 because it has the most contemporary of the design and it does feel a lot cleaner than the other devices. So I can agree with your first and last choice, and actually things like the N70, yeah, because it's hard to choose there which of those N7 ones do you have. Maybe the 78, the 73 could possibly have a shout as well, or the 7610. The 6650, I'm assuming, was included for much the same reason as the 76 you felt sorry for, and it had the unique light-up keyboard.
I just couldn't resist putting in that photograph of the whole keyboard and D-pad lighting up in phosphorescent green. It's just beautiful.
Yeah, I would agree that I think it's a real shame we haven't seen more made of those kind of indicator LEDs, because in this case, it would, you know, flash in different colours when you got a new message or a call was coming in. And even that device didn't really make the most of it. I wonder if that kind of LED notification light, which, as I say, was embedded throughout the whole keyboard, it wasn't just a light on the top of the device, you know, was available to third-party apps. You could do some really interesting stuff with that. And I'm glad you included the N93i, because although it was the most impractical of those kind of transformer devices, it arguably was the most beautiful, and that kind of mirror finish almost was a forerunner for what we have on the iPhone design today. Obviously it is different to that, but you can see the kind of commonality. And yes, putting the N86 in at number two was the right decision, simply because again that transformer form factor, or that dual slide, found its greatest sort of peak, I think, in the 86. You know, it started with the N95 and we had the N96 as well as the N95 8GB, but the N86 built like an absolute tank, and but still very beautiful to look at, and that's a compromise you don't always get in mobile phones. So despite having disagreed with you vehemently to start with, I actually think pretty good list, apart from leaving out the Nokia 3650.
It's very evident, I think, that the very act of choosing the most beautiful phones in a sense means you're choosing ones that aren't necessarily the most usable. Quite often beauty and usability do rather contradict each other. If you make something beautiful, you often sacrifice functionality and usability. David, what do you think from my list? Any particular highlights or disagreements?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say to everybody at home, I'm going to talk about phones that people actually remember now.
trying to impress people with phones I remember and they didn't.
Well, I'm sat here and I'm very impressed, so yeah, well done. Okay, C7 at number one, absolutely, definitely, yes. It is a beautiful, elegant, smart device and completely functional as well, apart from the EDOF camera. I wasn't convinced about the N86 at number two. It's got its reputation for being a fantastic camera, but just otherwise, it visually does not appeal to me. Out of the ones you chose, Steve, I think I would have put the i8910 at number two, because it was bigger and bolder than the C7, but it was had a similar elegance about it, I felt. The N93i is interesting, because, I mean, when I look at it, it looks incredibly clunky to me. But at the same time, I love looking at it, and I want to play with it, and I understand why it got featured in Michael Bay's Transformer movie.
That shouldn't be a strike against it, by the way.
But it had bazookas built in. anyway, the E6, I'm going to take that as just like a blanket thing for all of the Symbian phones of that QWERTY candy bar form factor, yeah.
I could equally well have put the 71 in there and no one would have complained either way, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Ones that I would like to have seen in there, the V51.
Ooh, yes.
I mean, it had a tiny, tiny screen, but it was a consummate smartphone. It looked brilliant in like the silver stainless steel version, and that was built like a tank. I would have felt safe going into a high risk environment, knowing that I could have been blasted off the road in my car, and I could have used that as a hammer to smash my way out of the wreck.
Do you often have high risk environments in Hull?
Not in my area of Hull.
David obviously lives in the safe bit of Hull. But yes, I like the E51 as well. Although I'll give a shout out, something I forgot, which was the E52 and the E55. Amazingly thin, also very robust. They were kind of the very height of the non-touchscreen smartphone design era. And, you know, it's kind of a shame that touchscreens came to dominate because they really were a fantastic bit of design. You know, the same thinness we're getting right now on touchscreens, but quite a few years ago now. And, as a pin of portable communication kit, very hard to beat, especially when they had big battery capacity, would go for ages. And the E55 maybe stands out in particular in my mind as a piece of design because it had that interesting double key keyboard. But yeah, sorry, David, back to you.
Yeah, well, actually, of my E51, there was there was one thing that could destroy it, which was a Carphone Warehouse Repair Centre. other phones I would like to have seen there. I can't believe that the N8 and the E7 weren't in there. The new industrial design. I mean, I think these are some of the best. I mean, to me, if the E7 had have had the N8's camera, I'd have never bought another phone again. I'd have been in Nirvana with that. And on a similar line with that, like, flip hinge model. Not quite the N97, but the N97 Mini. I thought that was brilliant because that was another one that was very firmly built. It was a very strong phone, and just being compacted a little bit, it was great just to hold in my hand and just having that keyboard that could flip out as well. It was just a great option and had a great camera as well. I think that was a classic.
Yeah, I like all my top 10s. Everyone complains that they really should have been top 20, so maybe I should have learned my lesson by now and just expand them. The danger then is you end up listing every single model ever done. And I was really trying to spread the models around the different platforms within Symbian and also around the different eras over the last decade. The NA does have a rather beautiful utilitarian design, but having just put the C7 in, I thought the NA was just too similar, David, but I do take your point. Let's move on. Another long rambling article from myself, which is worth discussing briefly. If you're an N8 fan, a big N8 fan, you love the camera, you love the build quality, you love the FM transmitter, the big speaker, you love the micro SD expandability, the form factor. If you love all those things, given that your N8's 18 months old, getting on for 2 years old, maybe your contract's coming up for renewal and you want to upgrade, what exactly do you upgrade to? Is it the 808 PureView, which is the natural shoe-in, or are there alternatives out there in the wider smartphone market which might perhaps fit the bill? Now, I picked out, Rafe, here, the HTC One S as a possible alternative, slightly larger, Android 4 HTC with Sense. I picked out the Sony Xperia S, also with a fairly good camera, 4.3-inch, but a 720p screen. I picked out the iPhone 4S, of course, with a very similar form factor to the N8, with an almost good camera, to be honest, in most light conditions, and with all the other usual iPhone benefits. I picked out the Nokia N9, just to be different. I think there's still got a lot going for it, especially if you're an N8 fan, then by definition, you're a bit of a geek. And to be honest, the N9 is the ultimate smartphone for geeks and going forward, and there's great community support updates on that going forward. And also picked out the Nokia Lumia 800 and even the 900, which I've also got here now as other possible options. And I rated each of these options in terms of how well they matched up against the N8 fans' core strengths as they'd rate their device. And to be honest, none of them got very high apart from the 808 PureView, which, as you might expect, being basically an N8 on steroids with protein pills and lights on and bells, the 808 PureView basically knocks the N8 out of the park, basically improving in every single area. Is the N8 a complete shoe-in, Rafe? What's your opinion? I listed some fairly hard-hitting current devices there. Are you as surprised as I was that they didn't get anywhere close to the 808?
Well, I mean, I was surprised in one sense because there's some really great devices on this list. But in one sense, this article was weighted, but that's as it should be. I mean, as you said at the beginning, this is for current N8 owners.
Yeah.
And there's a reason they already have their device. You know, they've already made some purchase decisions. And so in that sense, this decision is already weighted in their favor. I mean, you talked about, you know, the great camera and the nighttime camera. So generally, that's going to mean you're going to have a best-in-class camera, whatever you do. And then there's things like the build quality and the multitasking and, you know, FM transmitter. There's quite a few other hardware requirements which kind of do tip the favor, the scales in favor of Symbian because of, you know, the fact that the platform really supports and has that kind of thing. If you take some of those out, it becomes a bit closer. And for me, this kind of decision matrix, if you like, and I think you chose some, you know, great devices to compare this up against, and I don't think you'd find anything else out there that, you know, would do much better. Maybe a few points in some places, and of course you can get around some things by making a compromise, you know, having an external FM transmitter for one. That may be something someone's willing to accept given the usage scenarios typical for those devices, but it's really going to come down to the camera. And there the 808 is so clearly ahead of everything else that it does kind of make it a shoo-in. I think this is kind of an analog for a decision that a lot of Symbian users are going to have to make. You know, they're on a Symbian device at the moment. You know, where do they go next? And for me, there's kind of three big areas, maybe four, that are possibilities. And one of which is to kind of stay on your existing device and wait a bit longer. And I'll come back to that one in a minute. There's to upgrade to the 808 or something like the 701. It depends, obviously, what device you're on at the moment. But those are the two kind of state-of-the-art Symbian devices, to my mind. There's a switch to Android, which I think is particularly relevant to power users who like Symbian because of the, you know, the tweakability, the fact they can change lots of settings, you know, quite function-rich. I actually think they make up a relatively small proportion because I think those who are going to switch probably have already done so, and those who value Symbian devices as they stand at the moment are probably more interested in the overall user experience and the usability of the device around things like battery life, the build quality, you know, kind of the Nokia design language, those kind of elements. Of course, there's also the option to switch to Windows Phone. I think you actually need to tie in that one in with maybe waiting until the next generation of Windows Phone. And this is where people might go, right, I'm going to get the 808, use that for a year or 2 years, and then see where Nokia is with Windows Phone. And I think that's a decision quite a lot of people could potentially be making, simply because Windows Phone, as we know, has some gaps as far as the Symbian user is concerned. Now, you can talk about File Manager, Bluetooth, camera, whatever it happens to be. But obviously, it's going to be receiving an update in the fall of this year, in the autumn, around the next version of Windows Phone. And we've heard things like PureView, that technology is going to be used on future Nokia devices, which means Windows Phone, and there'll be other updates to come. And so some of those gaps, you know, will get taken away. And so I feel in some ways that the most obvious thing to do is, if you're not willing to switch to Windows Phone now and you're not sure about Android, the obvious thing to do is stick with your current device and wait. Or if you want to get a new device, look at the 808 and maybe have that for a year and then make the decision again. And so I think that's why this article was really interesting. If you read the comments, that seems to be a fairly common theme as well. You know, people going, it's great, I can get the I can get the 808 and not have to make the decision just yet. I did mention a fourth option, and that's obviously to switch to something else, and now be that iPhone or BlackBerry. Although I will say, I don't suppose that applies to many people, simply because if they were going to make that switch, they probably would have already done so. I think it's really Android, Windows Phone, stay with Symbian with the 808.
Yes, and I'd agree with everything you'd say there, Riff. And I think possibly maybe a simplified way of looking at it is that if you're on Symbian at the moment and you're happy with it, grab the 808 if you can get a good deal on it. But if you're perhaps tired of the tinkering that Symbian requires, well, then Windows Phone or iPhone requires less tinkering. Whereas if you love that tinkering side of it and you want to go for something that gives you even more scope and has got more applications, well, then Android is probably going to be a fun thing for you to try out.
Or the aforementioned N9 from my list of beautiful.
Yes,
quite right.
The N9 is probably the ultimate in terms of open device that you can do interesting things with. if you've got the skills. I think all of these choices obviously have compromises. The thing is, if you stay with Symbian, which I think quite a lot of people will end up doing because the 808 is such a impressive device, you do have to live with the fact that the Symbian ecosystem is going to be winding down, and so there will be less apps available. So I think that's something you have to go into with a conscious decision, knowing that you may not get very many new apps. I mean, there's quite a lot of apps already out there. The mobile web is pretty good for getting onto services and things like that. But I suspect for people who are looking at this, the apps dimension isn't a big factor for them, or at least it's not a primary driver on what device they're going to buy. And obviously going to Android, you're going to have issues around battery life and perhaps ease of use. But, you know, there's plenty to recommend Android as well. With Windows Phone, obviously you can stay with the Nokia devices. And I think people, power users in particular, underestimate how much brand loyalty means and that sense of the familiar. And I think there's a lot more to come on Windows Phone. And I think there's a kind of caveat to the Windows Phone decision is wait 6 months maybe and see what's happening then, because it may be a very different story.
And I think when you're thinking about alternative places to go after Symbian, I think the premise of this article is that basically Symbian is winding down, where to go from here. So I think possibly talking about the N9, I'm probably going to upset some people and say maybe even BlackBerry's, defeat the object of this conversation, because we're saying, right, we're on a platform that's ending, so going to another platform that is ending or has ended isn't that helpful.
Yes, that's obviously going to be part of any choice. I mean, I would say I would be surprised to see that many people moving to BlackBerry or the N9 in this case. The N9, a wonderful piece of design, but I do feel it's still a little bit bulky. Obviously, there's not an obvious future direction. There may be some community-supported stuff that comes out in due course. But yes, that's a very, very valid point.
Having thought about what I actually want, what I really want is just a device to run Gravity with a great camera. And I think the 808 basically fills that with knobs and bells and whistles on. Speaking of the 808, I'm going to make a pledge here, Rafe. We're not going to do another All About Symbian podcast until we've got retail 808s in our hands. So there we go. So however long that may be, hopefully not too long. But Rafe, what do you think? Another week or so, maybe?
I think maybe just over a week.
All right, there we go. Look out for the podcast anyway. We will try even maybe do an in-person podcast when Rafe and I get together with some retail units and go over it live on air, as it were. But I think that's enough for this week. A goodbye up in Hull from David.
Yeah, goodbye, everybody, and thanks for listening. And I'm feeling a bit sad and left out after that last point.
I'm sure we'll lend you an 808 at some point. And a goodbye from Mr. Rafe Blandford.
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, but catch you all next week or whenever it might be on the All About Symbian Insight podcast. Bye.